Ladies and gentlemen, get ready to embark on a journey like no other. Welcome to the Glum Lot Podcast,
your go-to destination for a unique blend of recovery and discovery.
I'm Brett.
And I'm Mark. And in this podcast, we will endeavor to create a safe and uplifting space for our guests and listeners to share their stories with sincerity and a touch of humor.
Remember, we are not a glum lot. The Glum Lot Podcast is more than just a source of entertainment. It's a beacon of hope, proving that even in the darkest moments, recovery is possible. Every story we share carries the power to inspire positive change.
So buckle up, get ready to listen, and join us in discovering the strength that lies within every individual's journey. This is the Glum Lot Podcast, where humor meets hope.
All right, Mr. Brett, we are in episode 32 of the Glum Lot Podcast, and we want to remind our listeners out there in the Glum Lot community to drop us a line at theglumlotpodcast@gmail.com, but also join our Facebook page, the Glum Lot Podcast Facebook page. We're growing in numbers, and that's where I drop the episodes first, and also any news that comes out, any new countries we're in or rankings we're ranking.
We're up and coming on the charts.
Yeah. So it's a good place to be if you want to be informed. So what's on your mind today, Mr. Brett?
Oh, well, let's see. I was thinking of a topic, and it and of course, it came up in a meeting. I've been to meetings, of course, already today.
Good.
And trust me.
You need it.
Oh, I need it.
Just we all need it.
Just coming back from a week-long stint in Florida with the whole family. And, you know, I hit one as soon as I came back Thursday night. And it was just a little bit different, a little weird.
Because you hadn't been in a while?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the first time I experienced that. So.
We do find a groove, don't we?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
when you're out of the groove, you feel it.
Oh, I was out of the groove. So, of course, I waited a few more days to go to another one.
Awesome. That's great alcoholic thinking right there.
Yep. So I went this morning, and the topic was not practice these principles in all affairs. We'll save that one for another one. But half measures. And,
For the casual listeners, half measures availed us nothing.
Yes, yes.
In other words, if you don't go all the way, you're going to get zero.
That's right.
You're either in or you're out.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm pretty proud of the fact that I pretty much went in head first with this program. You know, I had great people around me, but I will say this. I sure played the part that I was in fully.
Ooh, right? What do you mean by that?
So I am a very prideful person, and I wanted everybody to know how much I really was getting into this program.
Nice.
And but, you know, fortunately, as I got to know some people in the rooms, they promptly reminded me that I was full of shit.
You know something? That's something about people that are sober is they see right through. If somebody's faking it, they see right through it immediately. And people in AA will call you on it.
Oh,
not,
I got called on it.
And you know what's
it.
Funny is they're not really dicks about it.
Oh, this one was.
Really?
Oh, yeah. But I actually took it okay.
Okay.
But it was actually somebody that was one of our guests.
Oh, how dare they.
And he watched
Don't they know who we are?
Yeah, and he was sick and tired of me talking about, you know, oh, I'm doing great, but I'll get to that four step, you know, I think I've got it all down pat and all this. And he was just like, you know what, you're not going to do it. He says, you say you're going to do it, but you're not. He says, you're full of shit. He says, you know how I know? Because I'm full of shit, too.
Yeah.
And you probably know who this is.
I do. Yep, totally.
But I'll tell you what, that made a big difference because that made me realize I can't half-ass it with these people in the rooms, especially the ones that really care.
It also says that we all have the propensity to be full of shit. It's common among us.
Yeah.
That's how we that's
protect
our
myself.
Thinking.
Yeah. That's how I protected myself
so,
for years.
When somebody says, you're full of shit, and I know because I'm full of shit, you know that they have that, you know, thing holding them back that, you know, you got to get out of your own way. And this is one of my favorite sayings is you got to get out of your own way.
Oh, yeah.
Because we all have a propensity to get in our own way all the time.
Oh, yeah. We talked about this today on the phone, in fact.
Yes. And it's hard to think your way out of that. That was my guitar just fell.
Yes.
Because, you know, it's like I can't think my way into good thinking.
Mm-mm.
So it's great.
I can think my way into a freaking mess, into a blender of a brain.
Yeah. So that's why you go to meetings. That's why you fellowship with people, because they are you, but without the bullshit.
Yep. Yeah.
So they have the same thing, and they need it from you, and that's the way it works.
Yeah, and how grateful I am that I now have that ability to recognize that and that I need to talk about it. Right,
and not be defensive about it.
Yeah.
Well, we have people out there. We have a great guest today. I think you all know who he is. his name is Mr. Brett.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so we'd like to welcome Brett.
Brett!
So welcome to your own podcast, Brett.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah. The reason we're doing this is actually a suggestion by our booker, Matt Y from episode one. He's going to sit in today.
He's a real booker.
He's going to sit in today as our co-host because we're going to roast Brett. And Matt suggested we do this because a lot of people don't know who I am and they don't know who Brett is. So we wanted to get this chance to let the listeners hear our story so that going forward they were kind of have a little context as to what our relationship is with recovery.
Yeah, it took us 30 episodes.
32 episodes. Yeah. People are like, who are these guys?
But we are there. And so we'll start with your sobriety date, Brett.
My sobriety date is 9/14/21.
Okay. And as usual, we're going to rewind to your introduction to alcohol and or drugs. So let's go back in time in a little time machine and see little baby Brett
far away
with his overalls and his favorite rubber ducky in his hand.
Is that a fat joke drink. Because of the overalls? I would wear overalls as a fat kid.
Overalls and no shirt, I'm thinking.
Oh, my God.
And a corn cob pipe.
There's plenty of skinny farmers over there.
Actually, yeah.
Well now they really know what you look like.
Yeah. So go ahead, Brett.
So, I think my first ever experience with it, and it wasn't when I drank.
What do you mean?
I remember as a young kid and my grandfather being with his brothers and some of my great uncles and just family in general. And I remember very distinctly now that they had a full bar in their basement.
Okay.
And I thought it was the coolest thing that I got to play mixologist.
Oh, nice. Bartender Brett, yeah. They are like, let the kid mix your drink.
So I think that's how I got my fascination with it, because I felt like I was an adult, of course, like everybody else has that's been on here.
How old were you at this time?
Oh, God, 7? Have been that old.
Did you have a cigarette 6? Dangling from your lips when you were tending bar?
No. You'll find out. I'm a pretty squeaky clean thing. But
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So I guess the first time I actually tried alcohol was, to be honest, it wasn't even in my family at all.
Alcoholism?
Oh, no. I mean, not even alcohol use. I mean, my first drink was in, you ever seen those old oak? They're like made through like ice chest things. It's just a cabinet. And anyways, White Clad is the brand. And it was just this end table type thing that had a door on it. And they kept some peach schnapps in there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And this peach schnapps was so old that it had crust around the top.
And it crystallized.
Oh, yeah.
Sugar rim.
Yep. And, I also had another addiction then, and that was called orange juice. I don't know what it was, but I could not get enough of it when I was in high school.
You should have stuck with it.
So I figured, that stuff's giving me some zits and stuff. It's pretty acidic. I wonder what some sweet peach schnapps would be like in that. And I remembered from somewhere that was called a fuzzy navel.
Yes.
Well, I promptly, after they had left for their day, I went and did that and mixed it up for the bus stop.
Oh, wow.
And,
nice.
So...
Get fucked up at school.
Yeah.
Now, how old are you at this time?
I had to be maybe 14.
Okay.
Or 15. And so, I don't remember. All I know is remembers I just felt warm, right? And I felt super cool because I told everybody at the bus stop.
I was going to say, were you doing this alone or were you bringing your friends in on it?
Well, I didn't bring, it was all mine.
Yeah.
Right. But I was certainly telling them about, I'm drinking right now before I get on the bus. you know, that progressed, actually. A couple weeks later, I decided to bring a salad dressing bottle full of gasoline to the bus stop.
Gasoline?
Yeah. Yep.
This is taking a whole other turn.
Oh, you just wait.
Wait till the bazooka shows up.
But there's a point to this. So, you know, I thought, hey, this would be cool to light on fire. And I poured it right down the gutter of the street, lit it on fire, and we had a wall of fire.
Nice.
And a bunch of kids beating on it with a backpack when the bus arrived.
Right? That does sound pretty cool.
So basically what I'm getting at is I loved attention, right? And so that's how I did it. You know, it started off with, I think that was the first time that I really felt like people thought I was cool.
Yeah, the pyro and you came out and it was like, holy shit.
Yeah. I mean, he started drinking. Now he's setting shit on fire.
And you know what? It's that chaotic behavior that's got a certain, you know, nudge to it for us.
Yeah, and it comes from me. For me, is I lived a very protected life. I was an only child, but I was not the only child that was spoiled to death and told I was the greatest thing since sliced bread. Mm. I was never able to. I could never do things right. I could never be trusted to do things right. Always had to act as if I was a perfect individual. And everything was about appearances.
Now, was this expressed to you through your parents that you weren't doing everything right?
Oh, my whole family. Okay. My whole family. It comes back from even my mom's parents were very much like that. My dad's parents, not so much. They were farmers and, you know, very down-to-earth people. But I was told that, you know, that's really not the way it should be. You should be all proper and perfect and, you know, keeping up with the neighbors and all that stuff. So
there were expectations.
Oh, yeah.
Probably impossible to live up to for a kid.
Very impossible. And, you know, I think what also contributed to my little bit of wanting to be liked by other people and fit in was I really suffered from ADD. And
did you know it at the time?
No.
But I did know.
Yeah, exactly. And the worst part is my mom was an English teacher. And so to have a child that is not academically bright, which I was, but not able to put it down on paper was awful. And so because I did, you know, I was never a failure. I would get C's once in a while, though. And that, you would think, was the end of the world.
Oh, my parents would put those on the board.
Oh,
those would go right on the fridge, a C.
No.
I don't want to, like, paint myself as a dick here, but I have taped report cards to my daughter's bedroom door before with a yellow highlighter circling the ones that were complete fuck-ups.
Oh, my parents were proud of my C's. They knew that was good for me.
Matt, you're a C student, and we were very proud of you for that.
Yeah.
You know, so, and as, you know, but speaking as a parent, it's like it's your job.
Of course.
To let them know that that's not acceptable.
But then you add a layer of a professional that's trying to get students to be up to their best potential.
Yeah.
But I could never really express my potential because it was all in my head and didn't translate through my pencil or my mouth.
And no diagnosis was ever made? Nothing was ever noticed?
No.
Okay.
They just know I struggled.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Okay.
And my dad did spend a lot of time with me. And, you know, he was a big part of what got me through school. But he was also very much whenever mom said something, he would get right on the train.
Can I just rewind a second to that bus stop Peach Schnapps experience?
Yeah.
So you caught a buzz, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so did you want to keep doing it?
Not really.
No? It was like a one-off for you?
Yeah. Yep. And but it did come back.
Yeah.
When
it was
always
there, right?
Yeah. It came back in my senior year. First of all, I was never allowed to go anywhere with my friends. So this was a monumental occasion that my parents let me go out, even as a senior. Go out to Green Lakes with my friends.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them brought this delicious elixir called Bat Blue.
Oh.
And that was my first real experience. I remember just feeling like the world was on fire and I was just loving it. I was right in it, right? And even my ass was on fire as I was running from the park police. Because we were doing not so great things, you know, just being rowdy and stuff, nothing horrible.
Right.
But that all transpired into being sick as a dog in the old Friendly's. That's a restaurant local to here. And sitting in the bathroom wondering what the hell I had just done because I had the spins in the worst way.
Mm.
And so, but that was my first real experience with getting drunk.
Okay. Yeah. Did it progress from there at all going forward?
Only when I went to college. And we've heard that
which
before.
Was the next year.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, now you're unbridled.
Oh, completely.
There's no guardrail.
And let me tell you, you know, I was in high school, I was all music. Everything was music for me. Vocal jazz, jazz band, chorus, everything music.
You were the soprano?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you laugh it up, but I could. But anyway, so I went to school for music and went to a local pretty good college for it up in northern New York. And it was my first time where I had none of that protection. Like, even my application, parents would get it done. You know, I could never do anything because I wasn't, because they didn't think I was smart enough or whatever it was. I just couldn't be
trusted.
Everything
was monitored.
Oh.
Now you were unmonitored.
Yeah. Oh, boy, was I. And, you know, it was just within the first couple days that my, and by the way, when I got there, I didn't have room in the traditional freshman dorms. So I got put right in the transfer dorm where everybody was starting
older.
To become of age.
Oh, yeah.
Well, let me tell you, I think my first semester in school, I got a 0.10.
Wow.
Yep.
Look at you.
I maybe went to, I honest to God only remember going to two classes maybe.
Yeah.
Yep.
Two total?
Total.
Yep. What were you doing the rest of the time?
Having a blast. You know, I quickly got a nickname called Coffee because I went to the local, the frat for the music. It was a music fraternity. And I went there and had my first experience with Wapatui.
Mm.
You know,
I don't even know what that is.
So that is 190 proof Everclear with a bunch of Kool-Aid and fruit.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Or we've had them before where you take what is basically a trash can.
That's what it was.
And everyone brings a bottle.
Jungle juice is what we call
it.
Yeah,
you
sure.
pour
yeah.
it all
yeah.
in, and then you pour in the shittiest high C and Kool-Aid available. Yeah. Stir it up, and it's fucking awful, and people love it.
Oh.
It gets you destroyed and sick pretty quickly.
I've seen it in bathtubs.
Now,
before.
We called it Wapatula. You guys called it Wapatuli?
Sure.
What is the correct Swahili translation?
what it is the translation is a step in the middle of a glass coffee table that was brand new at the fraternity.
Oh.
And break it.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's where coffee came from.
From coffee table?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. How long did this whole college experience last?
Well, I'm not done yet.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
But there's more.
Oh, there's more. So I ended up, and we had a similar experience on here with another guest where he said that, you know, he remembers a little bit like running through town and ending up in a cemetery. That was me. He told my story, no joke. Coming to and just feeling awful the next morning. I remember sitting next to a toilet. I couldn't even barf. I couldn't even do it. I don't know why, but I couldn't. But I was just miserable. I probably would have felt better if I had, but mm-hmm. I was probably at alcohol poisoning.
Was there any weed or anything involved at this
point? No.
Nothing. No drugs.
No.
Just straight up booze?
You know, I probably, you know, that is not even a bit of my story. I've probably smoked pot three times in my life.
Now, did you go out with the intention of getting completely fucked up?
Hell no.
So you went out with the idea of having some social fun,
yeah.
fitting in, having a few drinks.
Yeah, social, you know, getting together with people, having a great time, and feeling like I was part of.
But it always went – did it always go over the edge?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So much so that, you know, I ended – and this is why I only ended up with two classes I went to. I always ended up trying to find somebody that would just buy me a 30-pack of Bush. And I would sit there in my room by myself waiting for people to get done with school.
Ah.
Yep.
You were biding your time with your bush.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
and then when people got out.
Yeah, I was ready to
then
go.
Then the party would start.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was just waiting for that.
Yeah, and they're like, well, where the hell were you? How
exactly. And you know they were giving me.
I was waiting for you.
They were actually giving me crap about that, too. But I could just never get myself to go because, A, I was very ashamed. Because of what's going on in the back of my head, what I'm being told in the back of my head is, why are you doing this? This is not what you should be doing. You need to be putting your nose to the grindstone. And,
but you hid.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
So what happens at the end of the first semester? You knew the bell was going to ring.
Oh, it rang. Yeah.
So what happened?
You know, I didn't. They never knew. They just knew that I was having a hard time. And of course, I said that I got very sick a lot of times. I got pneumonia, the flu. I had all these things happen up there, but it never was discussed what was really going on. Mm-hmm. You know, and one of the other things that I used in an excuse was in music school, you're very heavy on credit hours. You know, typically I think full time would be 12 hours. Well, we had 22.
Okay.
And so I would blame that as well. It was just too much.
Was there a second semester?
There was.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
How'd you talk your way into that?
Yeah. I was able to go back. I really don't know how, to be honest with you, but I was able to go back, and I did okay.
These people are stupid.
Yep. I did okay that semester. I did go to a few more classes, and I think I even pulled a 2.5, which was like a 4.0.
That's compared passing. To,
yeah, yeah. But do I remember it? No.
Did your drinking continue in the
same
way?
Oh, absolutely.
So you just got better at dragging your ass into class.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yep.
What happens from there?
Well, from there, it progressively got worse, and I ended up, you know, I made it through the school year, and, you know, I made some really good friends. But they started disappearing one by one because they were moving on and I wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was getting pretty deep into my A, depression, and B, drinking.
So even in college, you knew that this was more than just fun college drinking and that...
I knew I was very depressed, and I had lost a lot of friends.
Yeah.
Let's say that.
Okay.
And a lot of those friends that I had made had also started graduating because they were transfer students.
So at any point during this time, did you think alcohol is a problem for me?
Yeah. Yeah, I did.
But you just didn't want to do anything about it?
No. No, I had no clue about any of that.
Okay.
Oh, no.
So what happens? What unfolds?
So I go back in the third, you know, my third time. Back third semester, I guess, and I met a rugby player. She was amazing. You know, she's 6 foot tall, great person. Really dug music, and you know, chilling to some Eric Clapton and Pink Floyd and stuff. But boy, I sure screwed that up too. You know, I very quickly got back into the routine that I was when I was in my first semester of school. I was just constantly...
So now besides booze, it was her.
Yeah.
So you had other things to do.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And, you know, the thing about it is you're there, you have freedom because nobody knows you're not going. You got a place to stay and a support, you know, financial support. You figure, I'm going to ride this for a few months, have a great time.
Well, I had almost a full ride, too.
Yeah.
And yeah, I pissed it all away. Long story short,
yeah,
I got kicked out of school.
Okay.
And I had to... ride home with my dad and knowing that I had flunked out.
I've done that ride before.
Yeah,
it's a tough
it was,
ride.
You know, and I will say this. It was a little better with dad because he had that farm bringing up, right? It's a little bit different than the expectations bringing up and being, you know, keeping up with the neighbors and stuff because they didn't have neighbors on the farm. But he was a little more understanding at first. And then I got home. And that's where I was told my family would never speak to me. I've tarnished the name. My grandparents would shun me. They wouldn't want anything to do with me. The whole nine.
You've tarnished the name. What are we, the Rothschilds?
Were you actually shunned?
Oh. Yeah, at first.
Really?
Oh, yeah. But, you know, later in life we find other things out. But, yeah, I mean, I was definitely the first one to have this happen to. Yep. And
so you failed and they let you know it.
Oh, yep.
So what how do you now you're still depressed at this time?
Oh yeah.
You're still drinking, right?
No.
Oh, you stopped drinking when you failed out?
When I got home. Yeah. Yeah. For a brief time.
Okay. But you're depressed.
Yeah. I got into pastoral counseling, which my parents could not stand because they were terrified that I would say something about the family or them.
No, pastoral counseling, explain that.
So that's just through my church.
Okay, you know, so it's a pastor.
Yeah, exactly.
It's counseling.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yep. Sponsored through the church. And so, you know, that did help a bit. And so, you know, got through that a little bit. And I quickly picked up a job at Olive Garden.
Nice.
And loved that. And, you know, it took a little while before I got back into drinking, I think.
Family.
Yeah.
Yeah. All you can eat soup and salad breadsticks.
Yeah. That was a hell of a host, I'll tell you that. You know, because I do, I do have a pretty good personality, and it was really coming out at that point. But yeah, it took a little while for me to get back into the shenanigans, and I think that started when I started working at a lumberyard. And there was some characters at the lumberyard, and you know, there that place, my God. Unbelievable experience, and I to this day, I will say it's probably one of the best work experiences I ever had because everybody was really there to help you out and get you up to speed with what you do there, but they also had fun. And so, you know, there was plenty of times where I was driving forklift and building loads for delivery for housing and, you know, had a 12-pack on the back of the forklift.
So it was cool to drink when you
Yeah.
How old are you at this point?
20, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I was 20 when I started. It was back in 96, so yeah.
Okay, so you're working at the lumberyard. You're drinking at work, and that's fully accepted. And
yeah,
it's a good
not
time,
not
and...
all the time, though.
Yeah.
But it was definitely coming into play.
Yeah. Well, drinking at work at all is kind of fucked up, but okay.
If you think so.
I mean, I did it when I was bartending. Yeah. But I was a bartender.
Yeah,
that was
right, yeah.
Fully
accepted. I'm dealing with heavy equipment. And
so yeah. do you start getting more into alcohol as time marches mm-hmm. on here?
Yeah. At that point, I decided to move out of my parents'
now,
house.
Now, let me ask you this. For a lot of us, myself included, alcohol, I drank for effect. Mm. So, yeah, it was cool and social and, you know, party, blah, blah, blah. But I drank for effect.
Yeah.
Were you drinking for effect at this point?
I was drinking so I could loosen up because I was, you know, I was so ashamed of my past right now at this point because now I flunked out of school. I don't have a degree, and everybody had to have a degree in my family. So, you know, I was drinking to forget that and also to fit in with this new crowd.
Okay.
Yeah. And to gain friends. And so after a while, I decided to move out of my parents' place, and I had a good friend of mine that had a house locally, and we lived there, and that's where it really started getting bad again.
Mm-hmm.
I was missing work, late on rent.
Boy, it's almost like you went back to school.
Right. Any chance I had some freedom. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know why? Because I was completely immature.
Yeah.
Completely immature.
Right.
I had no idea how to do anything. So when I'm left to my own devices, I'll screw it up. No doubt. Because everything was done for me.
Now, were you drinking alone at this point? Or
Yep. Waiting for, you know, the days that I wouldn't go to work was just because I wanted to sit and drink all day.
Yeah.
And wait for them to get home so we could really get going.
You didn't want to go to the job you could drink at. So you could drink at home.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, wait a minute.
Sure.
I can drink and get paid for it, but I'm not doing
that.
Yeah,
but there's a difference between having to lift heavy things and sit on the couch.
Yeah.
Right?
So you're into this just lifestyle of just sloth.
Oh,
basically
God.
Just drinking and
well, yeah,
fucking
only because I had
nothing.
No idea how to live on my own. You know, I had taken out a credit card. I fucked that up. I was late, you know, this guy's that I was living with, it was his grandmother's house.
Yeah.
And, you know, she cut me this crazy deal, like $100 a month to live there. I couldn't even do that.
Yeah. But granny wants the rent.
Well, and yeah, but even then I would lie to granny.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of lying, to cover up my insecurities and my, you know, immaturity.
So what happens from here?
Let's see. Screw up a couple relationships. Let's see. Then after that, I met a girl and
nice.
had a great, great run of it. I really wasn't drinking at this point again.
So you get into this relationship.
Yeah.
You start pursuing that. The drinking falls away for a bit.
It really does.
What about your depression?
No, that's always there.
Okay.
That is a huge part
it's
of it.
It's always an underlying thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's a huge part of even to today. I still have it. And that does run in my family, it's for sure, depression and anxiety. But I had met a fantastic lady, and that was great for 3 years. And she was younger than me. She was in school and, you know, graduated and, you know, everything was perfect. I was still working at the lumberyard. I kind of got my crap together, and I was moving up the chain in the lumberyard and was becoming an assistant manager and had a lot of responsibility. So things were pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I outgrew the yard guy, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, with most of us, it's not a straight trip down to the bottom.
No.
You know, we do have our successes along the way. And, Yeah, it's kind of a wavy path.
Like a stock market.
And you nailed it. That's exactly me, without a doubt.
Yeah, and you know what? It's part of it is that we look back on, you know, when we're in our active alcoholism, we look at the good times and say, well, now, wait a minute. It's not that unmanageable. I became a manager. I did this. I did that. We ignore the down parts.
Yeah.
You know, so we look at the top of the curve and say, well, that's me. The rest of it, you know.
Yeah.
I used to reward myself at the top of the curve that would cause it to go straight back.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So this girl, everything was going great until she turned 21. She decided to, you know, she was still young. I was a little bit older. She decided to start enjoying life. And that meant going out to bars all the time, doing her own thing, and ultimately, you know, having extracurricular activities. And that is when I started back up, because that devastated me.
Mm.
The week prior to finding out, I had been shopping for an engagement ring.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. So that was a major turning point at that time.
Yeah.
For me to get back into it.
So she was doing drugs and drinking and all that?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yep. You know, just hanging out with some crazy crowds, and I won't get into the details, you know, because, you know, I'm no different. I got out and I was doing my crazy crap too when I went to school. So we all experienced those things. So
does
I don't want that to define her.
Does a relationship fall apart?
Oh, yeah. 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 She just totally dished me.
So did your drinking start to escalate?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So obviously the depression escalates.
Mm-hmm.
Because not only do you have what would be considered like a chemical.
Yeah.
Depression, or, you know, imbalance. Yeah.
Situational now, too.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, to be honest with you, at this point, I don't remember a whole lot for another year or so. I do not. I couldn't even tell you what happened in that year. It was so bad. I don't know. I couldn't even tell you right now. I would really have to sit and think and maybe talk with somebody to find out what I did that year.
At any point, did you seek help?
Only through a friend of my parents. That was a pastor.
Okay.
And, you know, that was very uncomfortable for me, for reasons that, without getting too deep into it, I think he had ulterior motives.
Ah.
If you understand what I'm saying.
I do.
And so.
He liked the cut of your jib.
Yeah, maybe. You know, and I don't know this for sure. It just seemed
that
way. You got
that vibe?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It made you uncomfortable.
Yeah. And, you know, they've been a friend or a family for my entire life.
Yeah, that's what usually makes people not pursue any kind of legal ramifications.
Yeah.
But yeah, that shit happens. So especially in that realm.
But he did try, right? So I mean, I'm not saying that didn't help, but I do know that, you know, it was not comfortable.
Yeah.
And so that caused me to kind of, you know, rebel even more a little bit. But then through a friend of mine, I met another girl, stupid smart. I don't know how to put it. She was everything, man. I've never met somebody like this. And we quickly fell for each other. She was still a student as well. And funny, she went to the same school as my ex. And my ex was the valedictorian of her college class. And this was the, what is it?
Salutatorian.
Salutatorian.
Yeah. So weird, right? But, you know, this one I ended up actually marrying. I moved out. I moved out of the house again. We lived together, and we decided to get married, and things were great.
Are you drinking during this period, too? Or did you take the relationship in and slow your drinking down again?
Yeah, it slowed down.
Yeah, so there's a pattern here.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know? Definitely. Because, you know, I felt whole again. I felt successful. I was really doing well in work at this time. In fact, about a couple years into our relationship, I decided to get married, and we got married. And the next year, I was asked by this company that I was working for, the lumber company, to go down to Georgia and open a store, a brand new state-of-the-art lumber yard in the middle of the three fastest-growing counties in the country. So
Double went down to Georgia.
Yeah, buddy.
He was looking for a soul to steal.
But I'll tell you what, this was one of those times where we talk about, you know, I was very successful.
Yeah.
To be able to be asked to do that was huge.
You took the opportunity. You moved down there with your wife.
With my wife.
Yep. No children.
No children.
And you're very focused on your work.
Yeah.
And all that. So you're not really drinking as much.
Yep. No.
You're feeling a bit better about yourself, probably.
But it didn't take long.
Right. And, well, there's pressure with that, too, right?
There it is. I did not have a day off for 9 months straight.
Yeah.
And I'm not kidding you. It was Sundays. Every day we were there from 4 a.m. until 9 o'clock at night, repeat. Because they had nothing to go by for staffing. Again, this was the three fastest growing counties in the country. It was balls to the wall.
Yeah. And so you need to cope.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I was back with a 12-pack on the back of the forklift.
So your old buddy alcohol was there.
Oh, it sure was. Yeah. And that crew got even more into it, right? You know, it just became how we kind of lessened the pain, too, because it's hard work. And so, yeah, it really got going. But it was never horrible. It didn't get horrible until many years later. And this was probably after 8 years of being together.
Okay, so you're married for 8 years.
Yeah.
You've been down in Georgia.
Yeah, there's been, you know, times where I would drink too much, but it was never anything crazy.
So when did it go off this, like, ledge and become?
So it started, I decided to go back to school because I had that still in the back of my head. I had to have a degree. So I quit my job completely. Because the ADD, there was no way I was able to work and do this at the same time.
And you're probably making pretty good money at this point, I would think.
Right? I still have not reached what I was doing back then, making back then. I still have not reached that.
So you made this decision, and your wife is working, and you figured, you know what, financially we can get by on hers.
Yes.
I need this
degree. And, again, because I don't know how to do life, financial aid.
Okay.
Okay. So both government and private. Yeah, so you can figure that one out. Oh, yeah. Yep. So, you know, so we get there, and all of a sudden, you know, I got through school. I met a doctor. My family doctor ended up having just gotten done with a whole bunch of classes on or certifications with ADHD, and he tested me and said that, my God, I feel terrible for you because you are very bright, but you cannot use it.
So you've gone undiagnosed until this point.
Yeah. Yep. So once I got that diagnosis, I breezed through school. Started a scholarship for one of my teachers because he was so helpful and understanding with it. It was very successful, especially as I reached towards graduation. Was able to be part of a concentration. Only two people did that was part of the leadership program where we would actually work with the Red Cross and redo their leadership model.
So once this ADHD diagnosis becomes real, you're able to let people know this is what's going on and they're able to adjust.
Yeah.
And you're able to thrive.
Yeah. Oh,
for the first time in your life, academically.
Are you medicated?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So they started putting you on the right meds.
Medicated and skills.
Yeah.
Right? New skills.
Yeah. So you found an answer to that.
Yeah.
Did your drinking stop?
Yeah, for the most part.
Okay.
Yeah.
You figured you're in the clear.
Yeah.
All right. So so let's fast forward a little bit.
Yep.
And so when did the drinking come back into your life?
When I got – my wife decided to go back to school, and she really wanted to pursue – she was a teacher.
Yeah.
And she wanted to pursue way more, becoming a doctor in education.
Okay. It sounds to me like the heart of your problem in your life is school.
Mm-hmm.
Just if it wasn't for school, you guys would have been fine.
No.
I'm kidding.
No.
I'm being facetious.
So all of a sudden, she had something other than me, is what the problem was.
Okay.
She was very involved with her school. Loved the prestige that came along with working in a doctorate program. I got to know the guy across the road from us who was a woodworker, and he was a computer engineer, but he drank like a fish. And he taught me woodworking and how to drink like a fish.
Mm.
And I ended up spending all my time over there. And the time that she did have, I was not with her, not present at all. And so she decided to go out and do some extracurricular activities. This time it was kind of my fault too, right? So, you know, that ended up in a divorce. I ended up actually homeless after that.
Oh, wow.
Because I was not working.
And you had no money.
No money. And
are you still in Georgia?
Yeah. all by myself.
Seems like a better place to be homeless weather-wise,
right.
though.
You know?
Yeah, well, so I decided I need to come home because what I had graduated in the industry, it was just there was no – this was also during the housing crisis. So anything that I had experience with home building materials and all that goes along with that died. So I had nothing, and I drove back up to New York with my two cats and whatever I had, little I had other than that, and lived in my parents' basement, unfinished basement, with my two cats. And that's
so pretty depressing.
Woof. Yep.
Did alcohol come back in?
Oh, yeah.
Say, hey,
yeah,
Brett.
I was drinking down there.
Hey, Brett, I'll make everything okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yep, I was drinking Manhattans down in the basement by myself.
When did it elevate?
Fucking classic.
Yeah, right?
When did it elevate to the point where you were like, this is an issue I need to do something
yeah,
about?
Yeah, yeah. So I could talk forever about all the things that led up to this, and I do like to get to the part where I do start recovering. But
yeah,
I did the divorce, right? I found another wonderful person, another teacher, and I'm still married to her to this day. Right.
Yeah.
The problem is my depression just nearly never went away. And after a while, I got drinking so bad that I would spend weeks in bed depressed. I would drink. You know, I was also a singer. I was a barber shopper. Nobody ever knows what that is anymore. But vocal harmony anyways.
Yeah.
And, you know, the guy that I sang with was a rep for a very big alcohol company. And so I had all full access. It just got to be a freaking disaster. And, you know, many, many counselors for depression never talked about drinking. Mm-hmm. Right. Because surely I didn't want to admit that I had a problem. But it ended up to the point where I just couldn't get out of bed. My wife was worried about me. She didn't even know the extent of my drinking at all. I was a closet drinker. And so after many, many counselors, many newbies, there was one. There was this one. And I went, and she was an older lady, and within 15 minutes, and this still blows my mind to this day, she goes, I know what you're doing. Oh, and by the way, I spent inpatient in a mental hospital, too, in there. So this was after this. I met this lady after I got out because I went right back to drinking. And she looked at me, and she goes, I got you figured out. You're an alcoholic. And I'm like, you know, I don't know what to say.
Well, did you say, no, I'm not?
No, I didn't. I couldn't. I honestly,
God. How dare you?
No. I was so blown away that she had me pegged that quick.
And so you knew when she said that, she's right.
It shocked me into reality is what it did.
It's funny how that works because you're going through all these counselors, and it's. I did the same exact thing where you're looking for, I know something's wrong with me, right?
Yeah.
And I'm looking for, there's got to be a solution that doesn't involve me quitting drinking. There's got to be something else.
Or me doing any work.
It's something else.
There's got to be something else. I'm just waiting for that one counselor to be like, diagnose me with that thing that gives me the green light.
Give me the magic pill.
Give me the magic pill. That's what's been wrong with me this whole time.
That's right.
Now I can move on. Yep. And now I can go live my life. And I really don't, like you said, I don't have to change anything other than take
And the reality is you did get the magic pill.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I got the magic pill.
Unfortunately, you have to swallow it.
No, you know what? You know what? At that point, I swallowed it.
Yeah.
No. God, that sounds terrible. Anyways, but
it's not the first time I've heard you say
that. Oh, yeah, I'll tell you. Anyways, that's part two someday.
Yeah.
But not really. So anyways, you know, this lady, she was all about AA. A couple weeks later, I found out she was AA.
Oh, she was sober.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so she was very big on me getting into meetings, and I was part of a group, a professionals group that she put me in.
So you never went to an inpatient rehab?
Nope.
You went to an inpatient mental
hospital for major depressive disorder.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Which was not wrong.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Anyways,
I know we're short on time, but what was the episode that led you into the mental hospital?
I burned a teenager.
Oh, okay.
Oh, is that all?
No, that's not what got me into the mental hospital. What got me into the mental hospital was not.
Now let's be clear.
Yeah.
You didn't emoliate a teenager.
No. That was just a circumstance of my drinking that started telling me things were a little out of control.
Yeah.
What really did it was not being able to get out of bed and feeling that the world was against me and my life was over.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all it was to it. And so this lady, she goes, you got to get into AA. And I'm like, oh, Jesus. You know, I got to get professional type help for something I don't, you know, I never wanted to talk about in the first place. But now I got to start actually doing this,
right?
I admitted that it happened.
In your gut, did you agree with her?
I did.
Okay.
Yep, I did.
Yep.
But again, making that step. And, you know, what helped me get that step was one of the individuals, and he's a person that I value very much. The one of those people was in that group with me, called me and texted me every single day telling me where he would be and for me to be there if I wanted to. And I wanted to.
So he reached out.
Every day. And this was for the first 9 months of my sobriety. Every day without fail.
Many of us have a person like that in our story. I did too. My first sponsor would do that.
And so I went to my first meeting. I did raise my hand. I honestly, you know, I can say I have been all in since day one. Honest to God, I never wanted to get away because I felt for once that people understood me. My parents never understood me. My family never understood me. My ex-wives didn't understand me really, you know. In this place, my God, I just wept the whole time. And, you know, one of the ladies in the room held my hand the entire time.
You were home.
Oh, I was home. I was home. And that very person that, you know, we talked about in one of our openings, Mark, that told me that I was full of shit, he's also the very first person that spoke to me at the end of that meeting. He says, Brett, you got to know something. You're going to be okay, right? And I believed him.
Yeah.
I believed him, and I believed him hard. And, you know, ever since then, it took me a little while to get a sponsor because it's hard to ask another dude on a date, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But I did end up, after a few months, I got turned down by another one of our guests. I still had him on. See, we forgive. But I, you know, I got turned down, but I ended up getting a sponsor, and that sponsor was great for me. I started working on the steps. Took me a little while for four, as it does everybody, but I did it, and I went hard at it and had a wonderful fifth. And I honest to God went through the stops. Did I understand them? No. That didn't happen until probably that 9 month mark or so, where I asked another person to read the big book with me because they sounded really smart in the meetings. Mm-hmm. And she did. For every week for months went through that big book with me. And that's when I really, really got into this program and understood the program. Understood what it was about, knew the aims of it, right? Humility, and not all about alcohol, but, you know, getting to the root of our real problems. And
right, and finally having a design for life that it's functional.
Oh my God!
Finally, right?
So for once, I had structure that I had. Right? It was always everybody else's
structure.
It was your structure. It was mine now. And, you know, since then, I've gone through some heavy ass shit, not losing girlfriends, but heavy stuff that would have a tenth of it would have taken me way out to places I'd never been before.
You came in and that was it, right? You were one.
I haven't drank
since the day you came
in. No, I have not.
I think that's important, too. I mean, I think, you know, you hear a lot of stories of relapse. I think we're probably going to hear one. Maybe on the next episode.
There's
that
a hint.
Be me. But no,
it doesn't have to be a part of the story.
No, right. And it doesn't. And I, you know, I attribute that to people that just took to me.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what that is. That's a God moment for me. I don't know why people took to me. I had the spiritual advisor. You know, I had no idea how to pray. I was terrified of it. I thought I was going to embarrass myself and embarrass God and all this. But this guy walked me right in there, and he knelt next to me, taught me how.
You know what? I've heard people say the program is simple. You do three. The steps are three things. Trust God, clean house, help another alcoholic.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that third prong in the trident, the help another alcoholic part, because you do a lot of work with other people.
Yeah.
Tell us how that helps you.
This is the thing that blows my mind the most, because, you know, everything was about me, you know, essentially, you know, because woe is me, all this stuff. But I don't know, man. They talk about a psychic change, and I have, since I really read through the big book, had a big desire to help other people. I used to be because we had to live up to this certain standard. I had prejudices like you wouldn't believe. I knew all the jokes too. But, you know, when I first came into the rooms, I was like, there's no way. Bikers and, you know, God, I mean, I'm way too pretty for this stuff. And
you do have a pretty mouth.
I know, boy. But that quickly melted away.
We all have that experience, I think. We judge a book by its cover. Once we come into AA, those covers are gone.
Yeah.
You know?
So, yeah. So I have. I've sponsored four or five people now. You know, they don't always stick around. But I do know that they get in touch every once in a while.
And it helps you. That's
Yep. I read through the big book with people every Tuesday night. I show up at an 8 o'clock meeting at 5 o'clock at night to read with people that want to show up, including my current sponsee. I'm a big proponent of step 6 and 7. So people, you know, that's one in the big book that's usually glanced over because there's not a whole lot of time spent on it. But I really feel strongly about it.
Right. If this is a program of change.
Yeah.
6 and 7 are paramount to change.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you have to be able to let go of your past, essentially, and not really look back on it, only just to remember what it was, but not to dictate your life moving forward. So, but, you know, I work with people that have sponsees that are working through that, and they know what I know about it, and so now I work with them on those steps.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I love it. I am 100% all in, and I'm so grateful for the program. But what's really cool is all the things that are starting to come out of it, you know. With some of the things I went through over the past year, this is how I met Mark.
Yep.
You know, I was going through a very difficult time with a stepson that I considered my son until he turned 12. And he was told all his life by his, you know, his father that when you're 12, things are going to change. And they did. You know, all of a sudden he had nothing to do with me and made some crazy crap up to try and make it so he could go with Dad. And but the first baseball game I had to go to where I knew Dad was there, I was a mess. I still wanted to support the kid, right? Yeah. Even though he had done terrible things, I still wanted to support the kid. But I also knew that I didn't know how I was going to get there. I get there, and there's this goofball.
Oh, hey, Brett.
And,
what are you doing here?
But those are the things. That was really the turning point of the blessings that I received as part of this program.
Yeah.
So many things have happened outside of that, but that's when I knew it's magic. It just is.
You know, it's really funny. At that game when I got there, Brett was a basket case.
Oh, my God.
By the middle of the game, him and I were laughing our asses off.
Yeah, we were getting in trouble because we were talking too much.
You know, Mark is always saying what a funny guy Brett is.
Yeah.
Everybody he talks to, he's like, man, Brett is the funniest guy. And I've seen some people where they're like, Brett?
Yeah. No, exactly.
Funny?
Brett?
You know, I'll tell you a story. I met Brett's brother and sister-in-law at a game that Brett wasn't at. And I was talking about Brett being funny, and they're like, what?
Yeah.
Brett's funny? I'm like, Brett's funny as hell.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, I don't think we're talking about the same guy.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm like, it is interesting, right?
Yeah, because you loosen up in front of me.
Well, I do.
You can be your more authentic self.
That's why.
Around.
That's why. I still carry that, where I've got to be a certain way, you know, but, you know, getting back to it, the blessings that I've received because of this, and, you know, and then now it's turned into this because we could not shut up. It's now turned into this, what we're doing now. And, you know, how amazing is that?
Right, we're going to not shut up on a microphone.
Right. Right. But what we're doing is, you know, we're replicating what happened with us, essentially. You know, I heard from somebody that was at that baseball game, being Mark, that you can get through these things, right? And so that's what we aim to do on this, is give people something to know and something to relate to and know that they can get through this. And, you know, it's
you know
just
what
amazing.
I always think about? I hope there's somebody that's alone in their car driving that finds this and listens to it, and it helps just 0.25%.
That's it.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
They hear one line that makes them think, I might be okay. That's all we're looking for.
That's me. I called last week. I was in the car all day, and I get on the phone with Mark. I'm like, you got to release an episode today, man. I got 3 hours left on this trip.
But, you know, and it is amazing what has come about. You know, I don't have, you know, I still get screwed up. I got screwed up today, you know, but I knew exactly who to call. And it just so happened that it was because we were talking about this today that it came up. You know, I could have called my sponsor, but it was just there, right?
Yeah.
And so, but it doesn't matter who it is, as long as I got it out and, you know, I was able to move on a little bit and, you know, I'm okay right now.
Yeah. So, the moral of the story is talk to another alcoholic.
Yes.
Because the alcoholic that lives in your head can't help you.
Yeah. That's so. Right.
What?
But anyway, we're at the end of our time. I know we've got a fantastic guest coming up next.
I just hope everybody still likes me.
We love you, Brett. And until next time, I'm Mark.
I'm Matt.
And I'm Brett.
As we wrap up another episode of the Glum Lot Podcast, we want to extend our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in today. Navigating the path to recovery from alcohol and other substances is a journey filled with challenges, triumphs, and self-discovery. Remember, we're not affiliated with Alcoholics Anonymous, but we're here to provide a safe space for open conversations about the complexities of recovery. Your stories, courage, and resilience inspire us and our listeners alike. If you or someone you know is on the transformative journey, know that you're not alone. Join us next time as we continue to explore the diverse facets of recovery. Until then, stay strong, stay connected, and remember that each day is a step towards a brighter, sober tomorrow. Thank you for being part of the Glum Lot community.